And welcome to this LexisNexis webinar concerning special educational needs and the impact of COVID-19. My name is Louise Price. I practice at Doughty Street Chambers and I'm a barrister specialising in the area of education law. This webinar will discuss the impact of COVID on the provision of education to children and young people with SEN. It is obvious that SEN provision, like all educational provision, has been affected by the current circumstances created by the pandemic. This talk aims to clarify what has changed in relation to the legal duties in respect to the provision of SEN and what has remained the same. We are going to start by looking at current government guidance for attending schools, then look at current government guidance for education, which involves non-attendance at schools. I will then consider the limits of changes to the relevant statutory duties to educate due to COVID and the related statutory law, and then end by looking at a piece of relevant case law. So starting with government guidance. There are two main sets of guidance, although practitioners should be aware that there are others that are relevant. First main piece of guidance is the guidance for special schools, specialist post-16 providers, and alternative provision during the national lockdown, dated January 2021. Which I will refer to as the lockdown guidance. The purpose of this guidance states that it is to provide additional information to specialist settings to assist them in delivering education during the period of national lockdown. The references are on the slide as to where the guidance can be located. The second piece of guidance is the guidance for full opening, special schools and other specialist settings. The latest update to that was the 18th of January 2021, and I will refer to that as the full opening guidance. This guidance states it's for leaders and staff of special schools, specials post-16 institutions, and other specialist educational settings, such as hospital schools. It states that it provides further information on the steps needed to ensure children and young people with special educational needs and disabilities, i.e. SEND, can attend full-time provision. References on the slide as to where that can be located. All practitioners in this area, however, should be reminded that guidance and indeed what isn't allowed and the underlying law is changing very rapidly. And therefore, before providing any advice, the updated versions of the guidance and indeed the underlying law should always be checked, as matters currently are changing at speed. Moving on to look at who can attend school. Primarily during the period of national lockdown, primary, secondary, alternative provision, special schools and specialist post-16 institutions should be allowing vulnerable children and young people to attend. Others should be educated remotely. However, as the lockdown guidance recognises, the characteristics of the cohorts in special schools and alternative provision will mean these settings will continue to offer face-to-face provision for all pupils and students where appropriate. At part four of the guidance, it specifically addresses attendance expectations. It is worth setting the first paragraph of this section out in full, as it is so helpful in terms of summarising the current government guidance position. It provides, we, referring to the government, want children and young people in special schools, including residential special schools and specialist post-16 institutions, to continue to receive high quality teaching and specialist professional support. This is because we know that children and young people with special educational needs and disabilities and their families can be disproportionately impacted by being out of education. Special schools should continue to welcome and encourage pupils to attend full time where the parent or carer wishes for their child to be able to attend. Specialist post-16 settings should continue to welcome and encourage students to attend as per their usual timetable where the young person wishes to attend. Thus, special schools, including post-16 institutions and residential schools, including hospital schools where safe and feasible to do so, are thus expected to remain open for face-to-face tuition. So schooling should be available stable and continuing, as is ordinarily the case for those who usually attend this type of educational placement. I understand as of last week, attendance in specialist educational settings was at about 30%. Do schools have to provide the usual level of educational provision? This is likely to be one of the most pressing issues for clients who are educational institutions, and indeed for families who wish their children or young people to go to school and obtain educational provision in the ordinary, normal manner to which they are entitled. The lockdown guidance recognises, at paragraph 4, that on occasion special schools and specialist post 16 institutions may encounter circumstances where they cannot provide their usual interventions and provision at adequate staffing ratios or with staff with vital specialist training. In these circumstances, they should seek to resume as close as possible to the specified provision for the child or young person as soon as possible. The guidance goes on to suggest that where it's necessary to take this approach, it is recommended that educational settings should work collaboratively with families to make these assessments and agree an approach that is in the child or young person's best interests. The guidance makes clear that pupil level risk assessments, which were used last spring, should not be used to filter children and young people in or out of attendance, but could be helpful to prioritise the provision of a child or young person if full-time provision for all is not possible. Of course, any decisions taken should be regularly reviewed. That is both in accordance with the guidance, but would be good practice in any event. But despite this guidance, one of the most important things to remember when advising clients who are providers of education is that the ordinary educational statutory duties are not disapplied, and we are going to come on to look what they are shortly. Given this, highly complex issues may arise because the duties to provide education, often in the case of children and young people with SEN-specific provision, against a context where such things may be impossible. It is likely that it is in this area that any litigation or complex advisory points are going to arise. Stemming from this, there is a small but significant point rising out of the lockdown guidance that recognises, at paragraph 7, that lockdown disproportionately impacts on children with SEN and their families. This could be used in arguments concerning failures to meet duties, and it is notable that it fits with the language of the Equality Act 2010. What about if children are being educated in a residential school? Can they still go despite the requirements and the government direction to stay at home? Residential schools, according to the guidance, should be continuing to provide educations. Parents may be concerned about seeing their children in this type of setting, and equally, education providers may not be clear about whether they are allowed to facilitate visits given the current stay-at-home order. It may be helpful to remind clients that the health protection, coronavirus restrictions, all tiers, England, regulations 2020, i.e. the stay-at-home guidance regulations, have introduced limits on people gathering indoors or outdoors. However, there are exceptions, which including ensuring that where children and young people live away from home in residential settings, they are still entitled and able to have visits from their parents or carers. This will both be reassuring for parents, but is also something education institutions will have to be prepared to facilitate. So what about pupils with special educational needs in mainstream settings? Vulnerable children can also attend mainstream settings that are closed for other pupils. The definition of vulnerable includes those with education and healthcare plans, and therefore is likely to cover the majority of children who have special educational needs. But of course, this won't cover those either without a plan who have special educational needs, whether it be because they are pre-having a plan or that a determination is made that has been made that a plan is not necessary. For those who are not yet under an EHC plan or do not have an EHC plan, but do have SEN, they may still be classed as vulnerable if they are children or young people on the edge of receiving support from children's social care services or are being in the process of being referred to children's services, adopted children or children on a special guardianship order, those at risk of becoming NEET, i.e. not in employment, education or training, those living in temporary accommodation, those who are young carers, those who may have difficulty engaging with remote education at home, for example, due to a lack of device or quiet space to study, care leavers, others at the providers and local authorities' discretion, including students or pupils who need to attend to receive support or manage risk to their mental health. So it is clear from that last group that this is not a closed list, it's not an exhaustive list, and there is a discretion as to who else may be included. Given the breadth of this, it generally should mean that all pupils with special educational needs and disabilities can be in school or other educational settings for their education if they wish to be. However, not all may be. We are now going to look at non-attendance at school and the provision of education. Currently, during lockdown, non-attendance at school is likely to apply to three categories of children or young people who have special educational needs. Firstly, those children who are not classed as vulnerable and are without an EHC plan. Those who are, but whose school or educational setting is closed due to a COVID outbreak. And finally, those who are extremely clinically vulnerable or clinically vulnerable and therefore remaining in a shielding situation or simply are staying at home in order to protect their health. There are specific duties to educate those who are not attending school. The temporary continuity direction issued by the Department of Education makes it clear that schools have a duty to provide remote education for state-funded school-aged children unable to attend school due to coronavirus. The direction was issued on the 30th of September of last year and came into effect from the 22nd of October of the same, i.e. 2020. This direction was made by exercise of powers conferred by Section 38 of the Coronavirus Act 2020 and paragraphs 4(1) and 4 of Part 1 of Schedule 17 of the same Act. In terms of enforcement, paragraph 10 of the direction states that the duty to comply with this direction by a responsible body is enforceable by the Secretary of State making an application to the High Court or the County Court for an injunction, and any such application may be made without notice being given to the responsible body. And therefore, you can see the duty is enforceable. For education providers, specific issues may arise from non-attendance in how to register related absences. Note that non-attendance for a COVID reason is considered to be an authorised absence currently. The Education (Pupil Registration) England Coronavirus Amendment (No. 2) Regulations 2020 state this. Helpfully, the specific guidance supplementing these regulations states that not attendance in circumstances related to coronavirus, code X should be used for pupils who are asked not to attend. May this be those who are ill or those who do not have symptoms themselves but may be required to self-isolate if they are a close contact of someone with coronavirus. That means that code X is being used in order to register and record the attendance and non-attendance in the circumstances of pupils in this situation. I have added to the slide the Department of Education's coronavirus helpline number. This may be very useful for clients who are education providers if they're in difficulty with what to provide or what to do, or indeed for families who are confused about the current guidance and or situation. The next slide, we're going to look at remote learning and what is expected. What should remote learning entail? The full opening guidance sets out the expectations and requirements that the DfE imposes. The expectations on the quality of remote education expected of school remain those set out in the guidance for full opening, which was initially published in July 2020. For individuals of groups, or groups rather, of self-isolating pupils, children and young people who are shielding, as per government advice, remote education plans should be in place. All pupils not physically unwell with coronavirus, but who are at home as a result of coronavirus, should have access to remote education by the next school day. Reasonable adjustments should be put in place as necessary so that pupils can successfully access remote education. All settings are expected to plan to ensure that any pupils education at home for some time are given the support they need to master the curriculum and to make good progress. Settings should work with families to deliver what is described as a broad and ambitious curriculum. And there is an aim, and there should be an aim, to return to the normal curriculum in all subjects by the summer term of this year, 2021. The guidance also makes clear that teachers are best placed to know how the pupils' needs can be most effectively met to ensure they continue to make progress, even if they are not able to be in a school or college. There may be, of course, real practical difficulties for educational settings in meeting these aims and expectations. Teaching staff and support staff may be ill. They may have to self-isolate, even if they are not physically unwell. Pupils may not have access to the necessary resources, for example, digital access to learning environments online. These may all present significant challenges for the clients you are advising. The next slide refers to the Ofsted guidance. Some assistance and guidance is available for teachers and institutions and families that may also be interested from Ofsted. This very helpfully points out that remote learning does not have to be digital and considers different ways in which remote learning can be delivered. I've included reference to this as it may provide very practical and helpful guidance for your clients in considering how to meet their duty to educate. It will also be relevant to any provider who is registered and subject to an Ofsted inspection framework, as it will assist in relation to what Ofsted expects in terms of education during the period of coronavirus is affecting schools and other educational settings, and therefore is worth being aware of. Moving now to the statutory duties that underpin the provision of education. Currently, these continue as would ordinarily be the case, as if coronavirus and the resulting restrictions did not apply. These duties were amended last year, and we will look at that next. We will also look at the fact that they have now been re-established and that that is currently the legal position. However, it is first useful to recap on what these duties are. First, there is a duty to secure special educational provision as set out in the EHC plan. That duty is set out under Section 42 of the Children and Families Act 2014. It continues and it makes mandatory the provision set out in the plan. Section 9 of the Education Act 1996 also continues. This is the general principle that a child will be educated in accordance with their parents' wishes. At its simplest, this section allows free state education for all children if a parent chooses. There is then Section 19 of the Education Act 1996. This provides each local authority shall make arrangements for the provision of suitable education at school or otherwise than in school for those children of compulsory school age who by reason of illness, exclusion from school or otherwise may not for any period receive suitable education unless such arrangements are made for them. That may be highly relevant in the current context. There is also Section 66 of the Children and Families Act 2014. That also continues currently to be in force, and it provides if a registered pupil or a student at school or other institution has special educational needs, the appropriate authority must, in exercising its functions in relation to the school or other institution, use its best endeavours to secure that special educational provision called for by the pupil or student's special educational needs is made. Perhaps the most important point of this webinar, as I've already said, but clearly bears repeating, is that these duties currently remain in place. The Coronavirus Act. The Coronavirus Act 2020 temporarily amended the absolute duty to make provision in an EHC plan, i.e. Section 42 of the Children and Families Act, to a reasonable endeavours duty. This meant that during a specified period last year, which was the 1st of May to the 31st of July 2020, local authorities needed to do whatever they reasonably could to put the provision in place, but if they could not do so, that would not necessarily be breaching the law. As I've already said, it's important to note that this amendment and its effect has now come to an end, and the usual statutory duty under Section 42 that we've already looked at now applies. The guidance for specialist settings states that if it becomes difficult to secure provision, that local authorities, settings and health providers should discuss this with families to co-produce alternative arrangements for delivering provision. These decisions should be considered on a case-by-case basis, which takes account of the needs of and circumstances specific to the child or young person, avoiding a one-size-fits-all approach. The guidance, however, reiterates that there is no intention to downgrade the statutory duty local authorities are under Section 42 at this time. It does say, however, the situation will be kept under review, and so anyone advising in this area or anyone that is interested in this area should of course be mindful that this may change as it is being kept under review. Needs assessments. There is a similar picture in respect of statutory assessments for the purposes of determining the content of an EHC plan. The timescales for assessments are set out and dealt with in the Special Educational Needs and Disability Regulations 2014. These were amended by the Special Educational Needs and Disability (Coronavirus) Amendment Regulations 2020, which I shall call the Amendment Regulations. The changes the amendment made were in force until the 25th of September last year. But again, the key point here is that these changes are no longer in force. It is helpful, however, for practitioners to be aware what the changes were in case they are dealing with any cases or matters that arose during the period where the amendment applied. The change was that the deadlines which previously applied to local authorities when considering EHC needs assessments and requests for such assessments were relaxed from the 1st of May 2020 to the 24th of September 2020. Where it was not reasonably practical for a local authority or other body to meet certain deadlines, for a reason relating to the incidence or transmission of coronavirus COVID-19, they had to instead complete that step as soon as it was practicable for them to do so. This relaxation of the duty does not apply to deadlines that fell on or after the 25th of September 2020, and nor does it apply where the deadline had already passed prior to the 1st of May 2020. Relevant guidance has been updated to reflect the fact that from the 25th of September 2020, the relaxations no longer apply, and any case that is in progress after that date to which the coronavirus exception was previously applicable will become subject to the usual statutory timescales. And to remind ourselves, so that is 6 weeks for a needs assessment, 6 weeks for the provision of advice and information, and 20 weeks for the issue of a final plan. On the issue of needs assessments and related provision, a separate but related point is that in light of the length of lockdown, when making assessments of need, local authorities going forward may need to consider if education out of year or repeating a year is a required special educational provision. Certainly, this is capable legally of being special educational provision, and local authorities and all relevant bodies should consider if this is necessary. Local authorities have a legal duty to review a plan each year, that is an EHC plan. Part 3, Section 44, Subsection 1 of the Children and Families Act 2014 says that a local authority must review an EHC plan that it maintains, A, in the period of 12 months, starting with the date on which the plan was first made, and B, in each subsequent period of 12 months, starting with the date on which the plan was last reviewed under this section. The dates for these were also amended by the amendment regulations, which inserted Regulation 19A into the 2014 regulations. This provided that where it was not reasonably practicable to conclude an action within the statutory timetable because of the incidence or transmission of coronavirus, the local authority or other body to whom that deadline applies would again have to complete the process as soon as reasonably practical. Again, this relaxation, the duty ended on the 25th of September, and now the usual assessment duty, or review duty rather, applies. In addition, there is a duty to conduct what is known as transfer reviews. This means local authorities have a legal duty to review and amend an EHC plan, if necessary, when a child or young person transfers from one phase of education to another. Regulation 18 of the Special Educational Needs and Disability Regulations 2014 deals with annual reviews in years where transfers between stages of education are taking place. It provides where a child or young person is within 12 months of a transfer between phases of education, the local authority must review and amend, where necessary, the child or young person's EHC plan before A, the 31st of March in the calendar year of the transfer from secondary school to a post-16 institution, and B, 15th of February in the calendar year of the child's transfer in any other case, and where necessary, amend the EHC plan so that it names the school, post-16 or other institution or type of school or institution which the child or young person will attend following that transfer. The amendment regulations and the relaxations they provided did not apply where the deadline had already passed before the 1st of May 2020. The DfE guidance last year made it clear that local authorities must have already completed the year's required transfer reviews and that there is no change to the statutory deadlines for those reviews. Where, exceptionally, completion has been delayed, the transfer reviews will need to be finalised urgently. Of course, this would have followed from the dates set out in the statute in any event, but the guidance makes it perfectly clear. Moving on to social care. The first tier tribunal that deals with appeals of matters arising out of EHC plans continues with its national pilot known as the single route of redress. To remind everyone what this is, it means that parties to an appeal before the first tier have a choice if they want the tribunal to also consider the social care and health provision in addition to the educational needs provision of the child or young person who's being considered. The tribunal can consider and determine such matters, but it can only make non-binding recommendations in relation to them. Despite being non-binding, the SEND Tribunal Single Route of Redress National Trial Guidance makes clear that there is an expectation that any recommendations will be complied with. Ofsted and the CQC will also consider compliance when considering relevant bodies that they regulate or inspect. And the pilot makes clear that if a decision is taken not to follow all or part of the recommendations, the responsible health commissioning body or the local authority's social care team must respond in writing to the parent or young person within 5 weeks of the date of the recommendation, and they must give sufficiently detailed reasons for their decision not to follow the recommendations. Practitioners should be aware that this is an area for potential judicial review because not taking into account tribunal recommendations could, of course, be considered unlawful, and public bodies dealing with this will need to be advised so that they ensure that they have solid reasons for departing from any recommendations in order to be able to defend a decision if they were challenged. It is outside the scope of this webinar to consider it in detail, but I flag up so that those advising in this area are aware, there is guidance from the DfE on the provision of to children of social care in the current circumstances. It is called Coronavirus, open brackets, COVID-19, close brackets, Guidance for Children Social Care Services, and that was updated in January 2021. Again, it is also outside the scope of this webinar, but practitioners should also be aware that there are changes to the legal duties in the Care Act 2014 concerning the provision of adult social care. And finally, dealing with case law. I'm going to consider one case, which is the recent case of R, the application of Shaw, a child, and the Secretary of State for Education. This was a judicial review claim of the Secretary of State's decision to enact the amendment regulations, which temporarily amended the Special Educational Needs and Disability Regulations 2014, as we have already seen, by relaxing time limits relevant to the preparation of plans. The claim challenged whether or not the regulations were valid and lawful. It also challenged the statutory notices which replaced the duty to secure the EHC provision as specified in Section 42 of the Children and Families Act, with the, as we've already seen again, reason and endeavours duty as an alternative. At the High Court level, the court found against the claimant and for the government. So therefore, it's important to note that these matters have been challenged and have been found to be lawful. But in any event, currently, those amendments no longer apply. The usual statutory duties are applicable. We've already looked at what those are, and therefore, all practitioners in this area must be mindful that it is those duties that education providers must currently meet. Thank you very much. I hope you found this webinar useful.